Hello and welcome to the latest Anarchist Communist Group podcast called At the CAF.
We're not in a CAF.
We are not in a CAF.
We have been, but not today.
Yeah, I've not even had I had a tea. But today we're talking about internationalism. My name's Sam.
I'm Rob. Okay, so, I mean, the question is, why are we internationalists? Why is the Anarchist Communist Group internationalists? Right. Well, this... basically, because we're anti-capitalists. Capitalism is a global system. Right? It's not a system, it's not, people talk about British capital, Russian capital, American capital, but ultimately it's all interconnected. There is a level of competition between them, but it's one global system. And also when you look at international corporations, these are based in many, many different countries as well. Mm. So capitalism is a global system. And this is more so now than it's ever been. Tied to that is the idea that the working class has no country then, right? We don't have a country, right? Okay, we do happen to live in Britain at the moment. I was born here, you know, but that's an accident of birth, if you like, right? Really, you know, we're human beings. And as human beings, our place is the world, right? And so we're fighting for a better world. We're not fighting for a better country. When we say the workers have no country as well, they don't. You know, most, you know, workers tend to own their power to be hired or their power to be fired, right? They own their labour power, right? That's it. Okay, they might own a house as well, right? When I say own a house, right, they basically own the bank money, you know, or whatever. But you know, we have a few personal possessions and things like that, but that's about it. We don't own the country. And when people talk about the democratic system or public things and say, oh, well, this is, we own that. We don't really, right? Capitalism owns it. The establishment owns it. And we basically own very little.
Yeah, my interests are much more likely to be aligned with a random working person from France or North Africa or wherever than it is a boss or a wealthy person in the UK.
Well, this is it. You've got much more in common with somebody who does a similar job to you or has a similar lifestyle to you, if you like, or basically similar economic bracket of someone who lives in France, Germany, Argentina, than you do with, for example, Richard Branson or Sir Alan Sugar, right? We've got very little in common with the capitalists of these countries, or whether it's the Queen of the United Kingdom, or whatever, the Royal Family, or the Prime Minister. Right? We have everything in common with workers from Europe, from Africa, Asia, and the Americas, right, than we do with the ruling class of our own people in our own country who are members of the ruling class.
And Britain, as a nation state, may well... be structurally exploiting other countries. Well, they are. It is. That is a fact. And has an imperialist legacy. But it's the same people who are organising, coordinating that system of oppression that are oppressing workers in the UK every day. And it's not in the long-term interest of the workers in this country to have that class of people, even if they sometimes benefit as an incidental factor from that exploitation of third world countries.
So, if we're internationalists, then we are anti-nationalism. We're against nationalism. Nationalism is a funny thing. People, you know, because at the moment, nationalism is something that's becoming quite strong in a way with the increase of the far right. And people sort of tend to see nation states, they look at Britain, oh yeah, and this, I'm British and all this kind of stuff and how important that is. And they see that as if it's been there for forever, which it hasn't. When you think about it, I mean, years ago, we're only going back a few hundred years and people didn't think even of England, or Scotland, Ireland, Wales or whatever. You know, they thought in terms of whoever was their feudal lord, if you like, and they worked for them. Or they might have thought about a king or something, you know, but they didn't really see things in terms of nationalism or in other times they've seen it in terms of religion, whether they were Catholic or Protestant. Or whatever. And it's only in the last couple of hundred years that nationalism has become a force. You know, it's not, there's nothing about nationalism. Whereas now, you know, if people talk about patriotism, which is seen as a good nationalism, yeah. Right, or soft nationalism, if you like. And then you've got the nationalists of people like the far right EDL or the Democratic Football Lads Alliance and things like that. And, you know, but they're all part and parcel of that. There are, you know, there are some, okay, people who are patriotic and maybe have nice sentiments and don't want to go out and kill foreigners, all right? But at the end of the day, they're all sort of on that same wavelength. Another thing about this patriotism, this soft patriotism, is although it's kind of seen as a softer option to nationalism, at the end of the day, if you go back 100 years ago to the First World War, we're talking hundreds of thousands of people died in the trenches, you know, for their bosses in the First World War, you know, and the excuse was used. It was a patriotic excuse. Right? Patriotism is always the excuse used for various things. Not only patriotism, it's things like freedom, democracy, defending our kids and all kinds of things like that. But ultimately, once you're talking about a country and love of a country in one way or another, then you're talking about being anti-working class.
Yeah, it's a trick a lot of the time, nationalism, isn't it? To get people to act against their own interests and to act instead in the interests of those who control and exploit them. But it's often seen, I think, particularly in a world where we talk a lot about international capital and money moving around the world, nationalism is seen as a counterweight to this. You know, you can have a sort of socialism in one country.
Yeah. But, well, you can't. Yeah. And that's the idea, is that people talk about, oh, well, a left nationalism, we could have socialism in one country. No, you can't, right? Because socialism, if capitalism is a global system, then the opposition to that global system has to be socialism, which has to be an international system as well. Is this idea of nationalism, then, is that, as you said, it's a way of incorporating workers, working people, and finding a commonality between working people with their bosses or with their oppressors, basically. The people who run things, you know, we have something in common with the people who oppress us, the people who exploit us, yeah? We have more in common with our exploiters than we do with some other exploited person. That's one reason why we're internationalist. If you're going to be against capitalism, if you're going to be against this global system, you have to be internationalist. We talk about being against nationalism, but then there are people on the left who would say, oh, well, what about some of the left-wing forms of nationalism that come out of anti-imperialist struggles or national liberation struggles that took place, say, in the 20th century and still continue to this day in one form or another. And what they're talking about there is certain countries where they were defending themselves against the imperialism of countries like the United States, Britain, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, and we would always be against the idea that America or Britain invading a country is going to be in the interest of working people. We'd always be against sanctions, because sanctions are just another form of warfare. So there are areas where we would agree that...
I mean, yeah, when the capitalist class or factions of the capitalist class, whether it's American troops going to Iraq or British planes bomb Afghanistan or wherever, right? They're not just doing it for, you know, to be nice. Right?
Justice.
Yeah, there might well be some... It's often used as a pretext, right? To, by and large, there's something to gain from it as well, you know? And so, yeah, that's... It goes without saying, this is not something that is, you know, anti-nationalism. There's no less nationalists, the Americans, or whatever, right? But what you get is what those supporters of left nationalism suddenly start throwing in the lot with all kinds of weird and wonderful political ideas. Take Venezuela, for example.
Absolutely. Well, you've got a situation there where it's absolutely true that America is sabotaging the Venezuelan economy. It's absolutely true that America getting involved is in no way going to support the people of Venezuela. We'd entirely agree with that. What that doesn't mean, though, is that you need to support the faux socialist, like the pretend socialism of the Maduro government, or that if you are in any way critical or suggest any alternatives to that government, you are in some way supporting imperialism or an imperialist project. Quite the opposite.
Yeah, if you can read certain publications on the left, and it actually says just that, you know, we have to stand with the Venezuelan proletariat, which means standing with the hideous Maduro government. You know? Yes, we know the Americans are up to no good. We know that the Guaido character is dodgy as fuck, right? But, I mean, look, this is not a good system they've got over there. It's not socialism in any meaningful way that you could understand, you know? It's, you know, boots are on the ground and people have voting with their feet and getting out of the country as and when they can. These are not capitalists who are getting out of there. These are not capitalists who are doing their best to survive there.
I guess the fundamental point is that there can never be unity between the rulers and the ruled just based on geographical location. The government will always be the representative of capital, and they will always have fundamentally different interests to the workers. And the idea that because you come from a certain fixed geographical location, or because you have a history defined against the crimes of America and Britain and what have you, that you can unify, or you have to unify behind a certain political project, is just nonsense, and in the end it will hurt the people from those areas. Now, from Venezuela in this case, as we've sort of touched on before, ultimately it's only for a globally united working class that we are really going to be able to solve the problems that we all collectively face as workers.
I mean, if you look at the history of a lot of national liberation struggles, I mean, going back to the 20s, I mean, I've been involved in this politics for quite a while, and I'm looking back to the, you know, the time when people were supporting things like the MPLA in Angola, the PAIGC in Guinea-Bissau, the Sandinistas in Nicaragua, and so on. And what you find is that whenever these organisations get any level of clout, right, and actually gain influence and take charge of a country, they become every bit as repressive as any other country, right? Because at the end of the day, it's the same as if you listen to the podcast on capitalist democracy, on the democratic system, it's the same old wine in a new bottle, you know, and it's the same with any national liberation struggle. Totally get it that people are fighting for their lives against imperialism and those kind of things. We don't, you know, we would support, right? But what we don't support is the idea of setting up some kind of national entity or support for some kind of national government left nationalist government, right? Because those are not compatible with socialism as we understand it. I mean, now we talked about Venezuela a little bit at the moment, but there's an interesting thing, you know, if we look at Kurdistan or Rojava, and this has become a little pet project of many people on the left, and some people who call themselves anarchists even have been talking about how wonderful things are in Rojava and the Kurdish resistance. Quite rightly, they've been fighting a life or death struggle against ISIS. But at the same time, it's ultimately another national liberation struggle. I wouldn't deny that there are things you can look at that have been going on in Kurdistan that have been progressive, that have been positive, and that there have been things that, yeah, obviously it's infinitely preferable to the butchers of ISIS. But at the same time, there's also the fact that in Kurdistan they've also been working with the Americans as well, you know, with the imperialists. And, you know, and I understand why they've been doing that as well, because they've got their backs to the wall, you know, so I totally get that, right? But ultimately, we're talking about an organisation which is the Syrian wing of the PKK, which is a nationalist organisation. Okay, they've got some of the ideas of Murray Bookchin, okay. But either way, it's still a national project, right? And what's going on in Kurdistan is, yes, it may well be progressive compared to many things in that region, right? But again, it's still not what we're looking at. It's not our idea of socialism, although it might have some good examples in there, right? And some bad examples as well. But ultimately, you cannot fight for socialism on a national level.
I think that's probably the point we'd make as well, which is, as much as we stand in solidarity and sympathy with anyone who's fighting immediate oppression and wanting to defend themselves and their family, that doesn't mean that we will necessarily, we won't sign up to the whole political alternative that they see from any success they might have in their resistance. And when we are critical of an organisation or a political movement, it might be the very positive things that we see within it, the potential that movement has, that causes us to be particularly critical of the flaws. So when you have something like Rojava, which has genuine radical and liberatory potential, the very fact it's tied into a state building project means it's even more vital that we criticize it, because there's all of that wasted potential that due to political mistakes could potentially be lost.
I think you find with the left is that's where they often slip up. They don't actually, they suddenly drop all the critical faculties.
Mm.
Once something like Rojava pops up, or the PYD, PKK in Syria, suddenly that's it. Oh, this is the thing, right? Mm. They look at the positive aspects, which, you know, we can say, yeah, there are some positives there, especially in the face of what they've got to deal with. But suddenly anything that's negative, they won't hear it. That it just doesn't exist. So basically, we're looking at an international movement, and we're looking at building an international movement. With so many of the things we say, this is not a simple thing, you know, because the world is a complex place, and there are many reasons why internationalism is not taken seriously by people, not only across society, but also by people on the left. And these days, people who call themselves anarchists even don't take internationalism seriously. People are so confined to looking at a national context of the country, you know. You'll hear people say things like, oh yeah, we need to bring people together. Or even, we need to unite the country. No, we don't. We need to divide the country, you know. That's got to be our goal, because we need to set the working class against the ruling class every time. And that's got to be done, not just on a national level, but also on an international level. And if we can't do that, then there will never be any meaningful change.